Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for joining us. We're talking today about people who work for minimum wage and what that wage should be. San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles, all of these cities have adopted plans for a $15 minimum wage. Today, the Baltimore City Council will decide whether or not to follow suit. Baltimore currently follows Maryland's, the state's, minimum wage, $8.75 an hour, scheduled to reach $10.10 an hour by July 2018. The law up for a vote later today would put Baltimore on track for a $15 minimum wage by 2022. The vote is expected to be very close. The measure needs 8 votes to pass, and based on comments council members have made publicly, there seem to be 7 lined up on each side. What would a $15 minimum wage mean for workers and businesses? Would it attract new residents to the city? Would it increase job competition and displace unskilled workers? Would businesses relocate outside Baltimore? The movement for an increased minimum wage is playing out across the country. This year's Democratic Party platform included a pledge to work toward a $15 federal minimum wage, embracing a proposal of erstwhile candidate Bernie Sanders. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump has gone back and forth. He said he would support a $10 federal minimum wage, but at other points he has said it should stay where it is, $7.25 an hour. Today we'll discuss the pros and cons of Baltimore City adopting a $15 an hour minimum wage. With me in Studio A is Ricara Jones, political organizer for Local 1199, the largest Service Employees International Union chapter in Maryland, which says it represents 10,000 workers. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here. And joining us by phone is Kaylee Locklear Toll, president of the Maryland Retailers Association, which represents nearly 250 businesses across the state. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And let me ask you first, what effect do you believe the $15 minimum wage would have on recruiting and hiring workers in Baltimore?
Sure. So the reality of increasing the minimum wage in Baltimore City really is going to be fivefold. It's going to result in job losses. It will harm low-skilled workers. It will result in higher prices for consumers. Businesses that are in the red are going to have to close, and it is going to deter future business in the city.
Boy, that's a long list of woes that you see. Let me pick up with, you said businesses in the red would have to close. Businesses in the red can't keep going long anyway.
Correct.
What is it about this proposal that you think is particularly threatening to businesses?
Absolutely. So I think the first point I want to bring up is about our grocery stores in Baltimore City. Many of our members are currently operating at or in the red, and this is due to a variety of reasons. Theft, neighborhood stabilization issues, they deal with a lot. And we all know that food deserts are a major, major issue in the city. And if we increase costs to these businesses that, again, are at or operating in the red, they will have no choice but to close. If they don't close, it's a matter of laying off individuals, cutting back their hours, cutting back any type of job benefits that they have. So what we're hearing from our members and businesses all over the city is that this just absolutely cannot go through.
Let me get your reaction, Ricara Jones. I mean, you've heard these arguments before.
Yeah, we've actually heard these arguments for every minimum wage increase that we've had in history. And then we find that they're just not true. The research shows exactly the opposite. She mentioned that these grocery stores are operating in the red, and we look at why they're operating in the red currently is because people can't afford to shop there. You know, they don't have enough money to buy groceries and still pay their BG&E and still pay their rent. That's the reason why a lot of these grocers are having such issues now, is because the residents who live in these neighborhoods don't have enough money to support them. So if we raise these wages, it's only going to help these businesses. It's going to help them get out of the red.
Kaylee Locklear Toll, what about that argument? It's one that's been made to the city council that small businesses might actually be in better shape if a bigger proportion of Baltimore residents could afford their products.
And, you know, we hear that. Our industry and businesses very clearly understand that 25% of the city lives at or below the poverty line, and in some areas that number is much, much higher. We understand that clearly. But if you look at the cost of this legislation through 2023, it's $145.1 million to the city. Baltimore City does not have that money, and if we're going to spend money like that, we need to invest that money in things that will make a real difference to residents, attracting and incentivizing new businesses that will create jobs, in particular grocery stores to address food desert issues, transportation issues that have long plagued residents who cannot get to places of employment, fixing education issues that lead to low graduation rates and a lack of opportunity that then follows those individuals, skills training, GD programs, earned income tax expansion, affordable housing. There are so many more important issues to be addressing rather than putting this burden on businesses that are struggling.
Okay, but another way of saying it is you're saying that there are so many, by the way, the $145 million that you cite is the cost through, if I remember correctly, through 2022, the cost to the city's budget for
it's 145.1 through 2023,
and this is the cost to the city's budget.
Correct.
And
correct.
You're saying you just said so many better ways to invest that money than raising expenses for business. But of course, another way to say it would be so many other ways to invest the money besides putting the money in the pockets of workers.
Which is exactly the opposite. We know that when workers have more money in their pockets, they absolutely spend it because they don't have a chance to save this money because they're using it on everyday goods that they need. So they're going into these stores, these corner stores, the stores that are across the street. They're buying school supplies for their kids. They're buying food. They're spending money at coffee shops. They're putting this money right back into the community. She also mentioned about, you know, we should put this money into affordable housing. In Baltimore City, we have a crisis. We're having a housing crisis because there is no such thing as affordable housing. Because if you're a minimum wage worker, there is nothing that's affordable for you. If you're not making $28 an hour, you can't live in the city of Baltimore, which is one reason that we just saw 7,000 evictions is because people can't afford to live in this city. So we can't make these type of investments without also raising wages for people so they can afford to live and thrive in the city.
But Ricara Jones, let me ask you, based on what the president of the Maryland Retailers Association just told us, there is such a gap, as you just pointed out, between what many residents of Baltimore can afford and what housing costs. Is there not an argument that the investment should be more targeted to housing as opposed to more diffuse, which it would be if it's money in the pockets of workers?
Well, it's a double crisis. So I think we have to, this is not an issue that we can attack. We have to attack it from two ways. We have to make sure our workers make more money so they can live in the city. And then we also have to find other ways to make housing affordable. But by just thinking that we can make affordable housing without raising wages, we can't do that. We can't do it that way. We have to attack it both ways.
That is Ricara Jones, a political organizer with the Service Employees International Union 1199 here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. With us by phone is Kaylee Locklear Toll, president of the Maryland Retailers Association. And you can join this conversation. Do you work for minimum wage? Do you find it hard to make ends meet? Are you working multiple jobs to cover your expenses? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'd like us to hear some of what has been said in the city council debate on this. When Councilman Eric Costello voted against the bill last week, he indicated he thinks small businesses in the city are already at a disadvantage compared to neighboring jurisdictions because they pay higher taxes in the city.
Coupled with our economic fragility after what we experienced in April and May of last year, this proposed bill would increase minimum wage and personnel expenses for small businesses in the city by as much as 50%. When I first committed to fighting for this increased minimum wage, I had envisioned this being a statewide effort or at minimum, at very minimum, a regional effort.
And Councilwoman Helen Holton abstained from last week's vote, but she also voiced support for a regional approach.
In concept, in theory, it's a wonderful idea, but you have to pick and choose those times when you want to step out and force the state to do what it is not prepared to do. In the economic fragility of Baltimore, it would not be prudent for me, after the work that I have committed myself to all these many years, to do on behalf of small businesses, women-owned businesses, that have a heavier burden to bear, being businesses in Baltimore City. And so I'm not going to vote against the bill because, as I said, in theory, conceptually, it is a good idea. I just think that all good ideas have the proper time, and the time for this now is not served with Baltimore as the only one doing it in this region.
Kaylee Locklear Toll, would your trade association's attitude toward this proposal be different if it were regional or statewide?
Absolutely not. The state has already passed the minimum wage increase, and we have yet to see that come to fruition, number one. And what it's
I'm sorry, I missed a word. We've yet to see that kind of...
come to fruition. We have not seen that fully enacted and go through across the state. So we really don't know what the impact of that increase is going to be. And, you know, it's so funny because everybody kind of has this mindset that businesses have these endless pockets. But the reality of our industry is profit margins for the grocery industry are 1%. Nationally for retail, period, it's about 3%. And so there's nowhere to get this money, this additional money from. If there aren't these businesses, there are not going to be jobs. And our retailers and businesses care greatly for their employees. Every business, every retailer wants minimal turnover, wants to provide salaries and benefits that will keep their workplace competitive and their employees happy. But the reality is right now that they don't have the money to fund this increase, which means they will have to close their doors.
Ricara Jones from SEIU, what about the fact that that Baltimore would be an island of a much higher minimum wage than surrounding counties or the rest of the state?
Well, we saw that Montgomery County is also floating a $15 minimum wage. D.C. just passed it. And for us to say that Baltimore is an island, I think Baltimore is a lot different than some of the surrounding counties. We have issues that other counties are not facing. And it's time for Baltimore to be a leader. We have a high number of evictions. We have high number of crime. We have a lot of issues that those counties and cities surrounding us are not facing. And this is one way that we can start to be a leader and that we can actually start to do something for our citizens that live here. And it's not surprising that we have a number of small businesses that sit on our coalition, because what we find out is that most of the small businesses in this city are already paying above the minimum wage because they not only know it's the right thing to do, but it increases their productivity, their employee morale is much higher, their turnover is lower, and they know that it just makes sense to pay their people a wage that they can go home and they can support their families with. They're not forced to work two jobs. They're not tired from working double shifts and long hours. Small businesses support this. This is why they've been speaking out. They've been doing radio interviews. They've been writing papers to the Baltimore Sun. They've been showing up at hearings and testifying. They know it's the right thing to do because it helps them. It helps the economy.
We need to take a quick break here. There's lots more to talk about with Ricara Jones of SEIU and Kaylee Locklear Toll of the Maryland Retailers Association. And with you, are you a business owner? Are you concerned about how this would affect your company? Do you expect that you would have to lay off workers to afford a $15 wage, or are you already paying more than that? You can join this conversation with a call to 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or an email to midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. The Baltimore City Council is scheduled to vote today whether to increase the city's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2022. Washington, D.C., New York City, San Francisco, and Seattle are among the cities that have adopted incremental plans to reach a $15 minimum wage. Joining me to look at the arguments in favor and against this bill are political organizer Ricara Jones of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and Kaylee Locklear Toll, president of the Maryland Retailers Association. And we're interested in what you think of this proposal. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or email midday at wypr.org. I'd like us to hear what the bill's chief sponsor, Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark, said about some of the amendments. The bill has been amended, she said, in a way that protects small business at the expense of low-income workers.
Of all the cities and states that have adopted $15 minimum wage, 99% of them have no allowance or discount for small businesses. We do. We have an enormous one, thanks to my colleagues who insisted on it. We stand out in a page after page after page of descriptions of minimum wage at 15 counties and cities and states as the only one of two that I know of that do anything to protect the small and minority businesses that we are concerned about. As a result, we are not only sacrificing the effects of this bill, we are not helping thousands of workers who we should, but we are not, so that the small businesses where they work and make their living will not be in jeopardy.
That was the bill's chief sponsor, Councilwoman Mary Pat Clark. And a reminder, the protection that she's talking about is the exemption of businesses with fewer than 25 employees or less than $500,000 in income would not have to pay the higher minimum wage. Kaylee Locklear Toll, why is that not enough of a protection of the very of small business?
Sure. There are two points to make here. So these employers, so again, businesses with fewer than 25 employees, are not going to, it's going to be impossible for them to pay workers less than the city's minimum wage when those employees could work out for in the city and then earn that higher wage. And because workers from outside of the city will seek these jobs and displace Baltimoreans, we will see unemployment rise. And this was cited very clearly in the Department of Finance's analysis of the legislation. In fact, it was along the lines of unemployment in the city could rise higher than what we experienced during the recent recession. And as we see unemployment rise, theft, neighborhood stabilization issues rise, and so ultimately small businesses will end up paying for the increase in other ways.
Let me ask you to respond to that, Ricara Jones. She's basically saying that even exempt businesses will end up being pressured to higher starting wages by this.
So,
and essentially, it seems to me that is what the Economic Policy Institute, one of the studies on which you rely, says there will be a lifting all boats effect of this.
No, absolutely. When you raise wages for the lowest paid workers, then you know the folks right above they also get to make more money. But the fear that, you know, we should keep our wages low in the city of Baltimore so people from the county don't come in and steal our jobs, it's just unfounded. And my answer, my question to that is, do we make the entire city suffer so that people from the county don't come in and get our $15 minimum wage jobs? It just doesn't make sense. That cannot be a good answer. And like I said, that's the reason why we have so many small businesses who are on board with this, who do show their support, because they already pay above the minimum wage because they know that it makes sense for their business and their business model.
You've mentioned now twice so many small businesses supporting this, and I'm going to ask Kaylee Locklear-Toll her reaction to that. But tell me who you're referring to.
So we have a long list of businesses who support. We have a Healthcare for the Homeless who recently did an article in the Baltimore Sun about, you know, how they, you know, they have found a way to pay their members, their employees, $15 an hour because they just know that it makes sense, that they couldn't have employees leaving their place and not being able to support themselves and being able to support them their families. Red Emma's also did a very important piece about how they got to a place where they knew it makes sense to pay above the minimum wage.
Red Emma's the bookstore and coffee shop.
Yes, absolutely. Mom's Organic Market came out and, you know, they said that, you know, once they started paying higher wages, they saw the benefits immediately.
Kaylee Locklear-Toll, let me ask you about that first, whether there's a difference of opinion among the 250 businesses you represent. Are there some who actually think this proposal for a higher minimum wage in the city of Baltimore is a good idea?
So what I heard Ricara say is that there are, in fact, two businesses that they have found that are supportive of increasing the minimum wage. Mom's Organic Market is an interesting model. Currently, they pay their employees $12 an hour, and they sell very, very, very high-priced items. So that's a completely different store. Maybe that's why they can afford to pay employees a much higher wage. Healthcare for the Homeless is a nonprofit organization. They are grant and donor funded, and so citing nonprofits as compared to businesses that have to competitively compete against each other in online retail and all types of businesses all over the state, that is not apples and apples. That's apples and oranges.
There are studies as well as anecdotal evidence that a higher wage, minimum wage, or at any point up the ladder, higher wages tend to reduce turnover. Is that not a good thing for business?
I could not agree more. But again, higher wage jobs lure more skilled workers, and we will see more skilled workers from surrounding jurisdictions to the city come in and take those higher paying jobs away from Baltimoreans who desperately need opportunity and skills training. And that's the crux of this issue occurs.
There are lots of people who want to be part of this conversation. Let's talk to Mike, who has called us from Baltimore. Mike, welcome to Midday.
Hello, how are you doing?
Just great.
I have a comment.
Yeah.
My comment is I agree with both parties, but more so with the business representative in the sense of it's hard to afford to pay staff minimum $15 an hour, especially if it's the smaller companies or the business with the small profit margin. For example, my company, we're like 9 years in. So our first couple of years, we started paying our staff $10 an hour. Now our minimum staff member is maybe at $18 an hour. That's after 9 years of growth and building their salary slowly. So I think it's pretty impossible to like make it mandatory for a company that's just starting out, trying to grow, trying to build, to afford that minimum $15 an hour, especially depending on whatever business it is or whatever company idea you have. But to agree with the second caller, you do have to pay your staff. I mean, that's not the second caller, but the first representative. You do have to pay your staff to be competitive and to build the morale and to show them that you appreciate them. And I guess as being adults, money is kind of one of the best ways to show your appreciation and said that they can take care of the family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's it.
Mike, I appreciate the call. What kind of business do you have?
Healthcare.
Thank you for calling. Ricara Jones, what would you say to Mike?
Oh, no, just thank you, Mike, for calling in to say that. Just that, you know, with this legislation, the increase to $15 is built in over time. It's not immediate. It's built in very slowly over time to make up for the increase in wages. And the very businesses I think that Mike is actually speaking about are exempt from the bill. So businesses who are just starting up and they have a small number of employees, which actually represents a pretty large number of the businesses in Baltimore City, they're actually exempt from this bill.
Except you yourself said a few minutes ago that you would expect some upward pressure on all businesses, even the ones who are exempt, if the law requires most businesses to raise the minimum wage.
Well, yeah, I was saying that, I mean, from the conversations that we've had and the business owners who come forth, they already do it because they know it just makes good sense for their business model. And it just makes good sense for our city in general. Like a lot of these, like I said earlier, a lot of these businesses are in the red currently. And we have to sit and wonder why. It's because the people who live here can't afford to shop in them. They can't afford to bring them business. They can't afford to sit down in a local restaurant and have dinner because they can't afford it. So, I mean, we have to, that's one way to make the businesses better and make sure that they are long-term and they're not in the red constantly.
This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with political organizer Ricara Jones of the Service Employees International Union and Kaylee Locklear Toll, president of the Maryland Retailers Association. And you are welcome to join this conversation. Do you think Baltimore should wait to pass the minimum wage increase until neighboring counties join in? Send us an email at midday@wipr.org or phone us at 410-662-8780. Matthew has called us from Frederick, Maryland. Matthew, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I live up in Frederick County, and I currently make $50 an hour.
Matthew, I'm sorry, we're not your cell phone just isn't. Oh, and we're not able to hear it. Try one more time. Speak up a bit, and let's see if I can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's much better.
I live up in Frederick County, and I currently make $15 an hour, and it's still really difficult to get by at that wage. Although I think partially that's because housing prices up here are so bad because of Montgomery County. So I don't know how people make it by on less. Additionally, as to the housing that you had mentioned in Baltimore before, my sister actually works for the Baltimore Sun, and she currently commutes to Baltimore every day from Frederick. And she had looked into purchasing a small house down there, but the housing market was just too expensive. I have to say, thank you.
So you come down in favor of raising the minimum wage?
Yes, I understand I sympathize with the businesses. They have to deal with it. But at the same time, I mean, people have to be able to eat and afford where they live. I mean, I can barely do that myself on
okay.
what I'm making. So
Matthew,
I don't know how they could possibly do it on less.
Matthew, I appreciate your calling. Let's talk to Brenda. Brenda, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I just wanted to say that if they think people can live on minimum wage, then they should try it for 3 or 4 months themselves. There's no way. Like Matthew, I work for $15 an hour, and it is very, very tough. We don't take a vacation every year, maybe every couple of years. The last time we took it was 3 years ago. We barely make the bills. So I welcome anyone to raise the rates so that we can actually go out and buy groceries, pay the electric, and everything else.
Brenda, I appreciate the call. Kaylee Locklear Toll, we've got other callers, I think, who want to make similar points. You say there should be a more targeted investment, but what is the obligation on business to address these concerns of people who say they just can't pay their bills on less than $15 an hour?
And they are very, very real concerns, Sheila. I don't want to minimize that. Nobody in the business community would minimize those concerns. However, the skills, job training experience that individuals receive via these minimum wage jobs are meant to help them move on into other jobs where they are going to make more money, and that's really important. But the facts are the facts. And, you know, emotion aside and all of these points aside, Department of Finance, Congressional Budget Office, one research institution after another says that these one-size-fits-all models for all businesses does not work. You can't get paid from a job that doesn't exist. And so we hear that argument, and for many in the retail industry, there are a lot of opportunities that come after that initial minimum wage job, whether it's moving up in the food industry, in a grocery store, management opportunities that exist in other types of retail. That's what these jobs are meant to do for people. It's supposed to give them skills training, an opportunity to move on and upwards and get other jobs that can help pay the things that we're talking about, for the things we're talking about.
Well, you mentioned academic studies. There was one by the University of Washington, I believe, after Seattle raised its minimum wage way back in 2006. Seattle's minimum wage is currently $13 an hour. A University of Washington study found a small increase in prices in Seattle, but no notable bump in the number of layoffs. So there are some studies that say it's possible to do this.
And I would question those studies, because I'm looking at a Washington Post article about why raising the minimum wage did very little to help anybody in Seattle. And the facts are this. Number one, Baltimore is not Seattle. We're not New York. We're not Los Angeles. We're not San Francisco. We are Baltimore. And those interviews that were done and a lot of these studies that are done aren't reflective of retail and small businesses. It's barely been enacted there, so it's funny that we're jumping to conclusions after a month of passing something like that. That period of assessment was very short in recent data, and I spoke with colleagues just yesterday in Seattle. It shows that employment is decreasing. Rulemaking and law enforcement has become difficult for government there, and their geography is going to prove very, very interesting for them. And it's very similar to Seattle, because employers have many choices of where to set up shop, create jobs and new businesses. And that's very similar to Baltimore City. When we talk about putting Baltimore on an island, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Makara Jones, what's your response?
So I just want to go back to a comment that was made. We have to think about who these minimum wage workers are. The two callers who just called in, they didn't sound like teenagers to me. They didn't sound like they were starting their first retail job ever. They sound like people who've been working probably in this industry for a little bit of time. Most minimum wage workers have some college experience. You know, it's not just their first job or their first go at the rodeo. They've been working, their parents, their nursing home workers who care for our elderly and our patients when they get sick, who had to go through training and get certified in order to be a nursing home worker. So when people talk about minimum wage workers or they're just their first job, it's very inaccurate. It's actually people who've spent time in school, who are certified, and who do very hard work every day and who deserve to make much more money than what they're currently making.
We need to take another short break here. When we come back, lots of people who want to join this conversation and more with our guests from the Maryland Retailers Association and the Service Employees International Union. You can join the conversation with an email to midday@wypr.org or a phone call to 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the vote expected in a few hours before the Baltimore City Council, a vote likely to be very close on whether to raise Baltimore's minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2022. I'm speaking with political organizer Rekara Jones of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and Kaylee Locklear Toll, president of the Maryland Retailers Association. And we're taking your calls at 410-662-8780 and your emails at midday@wypr.org. Brandon has called us from Federal Hill. Brandon, welcome to Midday.
Hi, Sheila, and hello to your guests as well. I'd like to begin this by saying simply that I'm retired. I've run six businesses throughout my lifetime, and I've also taught university-level management development. The first two businesses that I started fell under the rule of 90% of all small businesses fail in the first year. And it wasn't due to poor employees or I wasn't paying them enough or didn't have enough vested in them. It was because I was incompetent. I did not know what I was doing. The four businesses that were a success, I can point to one specific factor that made all four of those babies run well, and that was when I decided to mentor my employees. The rubber meets the road, so to speak, at the interface of a customer and the employee. When I had somebody who was earning, well, this is 40 years ago. But when I had somebody who was earning, let's just compare it to today, $8 an hour, if I said to them, look, it's going to be better for all of us if you smile when you greet a customer, I got a much better response from them when I was paying them $15. They understood that this was something that was in their interest to pay attention to.
So cutting to the chase, Brandon, I think you're saying that increasing the minimum wage is a good idea.
I'm sorry?
Cutting to the chase, I think you're saying that increasing the minimum wage in Baltimore City would be a good idea.
Well, not only that, but I mean, I think it's really arrogant for businesses to presume that they ought to succeed on the backs of the people who are basically doing the labor.
Brandon, I really appreciate the phone call. Kaylee Locklear Toll, how do you respond to that?
I mean, I said it before, and we really mean it. Businesses want to pay employees a wage that benefits them. They don't want to deal with turnover. They don't want to have employees that aren't happy and satisfied and helping their business. But there are realities that exist outside of that, and that's that many cannot afford to do so. And when you pass a one-size-fits-all mandate like this, you ultimately will be putting out of business businesses and eliminating jobs, eliminating benefits. That will happen, and that's been said over and over and over again. Again, Congressional Budget Office, Department of Finance, and others. And I think that's very scary for Baltimore City. We're fragile. There aren't enough jobs. Unemployment is 6.5%, while surrounding counties are at 4.8 and 4.0. That's Baltimore County and Anne Arundel. And that's scary for the city. We need jobs. We need businesses to create jobs. That's what we should be focused on.
Barbara has called us from Baltimore. Barbara, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I'd like to speak about the welfare and disability trap and how low wages impact someone trying to get out of that trap. I have two children. I live in Baltimore City. I ended up on assistance through a combination of being disabled and loss of financial support from the other parent. And I am here to say that what your guest is saying about housing is absolutely true. The Section 8 wait list is very long. All of the low-income housing units have long wait lists. And when you receive welfare, which is temporary cash assistance, I've spoken to my case manager. The minute you earn more than you're receiving in welfare, the welfare is cut off. You get a six-month grace period on food stamps, and then those go away. So if you're on welfare, we all know we have to participate in something called a work activity. And when Baltimore City Social Services solicited vendors for the work activity program last fall, they said, one, they have 5,000 people a year on welfare who are work eligible that they are trying to get off of welfare. Two, the vendors were only asked to place people in positions at 25% higher than minimum wage. So I have run the numbers on trying to go back to work, and I can't afford to do it and still provide housing and food for my children. If I earn $1,000 a month, at the end of 6 months when the food stamps go away, I am bringing in $85 less a month than I am not working.
So you're describing, Barbara, the situation under a current minimum wage. Are you? It's not clear to me whether you're saying that you, even with a higher minimum wage, would be better off not working, or whether you're saying the higher minimum wage could get you off welfare.
When I run the numbers I've done it at $14 an hour. If I could find housing for myself and two children at $700 or less per month, I can barely make it. If you earn anything less than that, if you can't get into a housing program, which most of us can't, you literally cannot make these numbers work.
Barbara, I appreciate your walking us through that. Ricara Jones, what about that? It sounds as if the problem, especially, and we talked earlier about housing, such a shortage of affordable housing in Baltimore that even a pretty hefty increase in the minimum wage doesn't really fix it, or barely does, for somebody.
No, we have lots of, we have a huge number of workers in the city who are working poor. They're going to work every day. They're working 40 hours a week, and they're still relying on food stamps in order to, for their kids to eat because of the poverty wages that we have in the city. So we have to be able to increase our wages to so that people are not relying on the city and subsidizing, you know, they're getting all their money from food stamps and working and not even being able to afford just normal things for their kids at this point.
A couple of emails we've gotten. Jody writes, the money to pay the higher wage will have to come from the customers. Prices will have to go up, which will put the consumers and customers at a disadvantage. And Alan wrote, I haven't yet heard Ms. Jones state where this additional money comes from. For most businesses, it comes from raising prices, disproportionately impacts people on fixed incomes, including the unemployed and the elderly. Your response to Alan?
So we see a small increase in prices at some places, but what we see more so is that when people have more money to spend, then they're going into these businesses and they're spending, and it's over. All helping these businesses out. It's like what I was saying earlier is that this is the reason why there are so many businesses currently in the red line is because people can't go in and, you know, buy food or have coffee or have dinner or even, you know, buy things for their kids because they can't currently afford it. And if they made more money, they will go in and they would spend more money.
But that doesn't really address where the money comes from. In other words, as Kaylee Locklear Toll has been saying, she says businesses just don't have the money to pay this.
Well, this increases over time, and we have a number of small businesses who operate on a model where they pay their employees more. So it's an increase, a small increase over time.
Let's talk to Stephen, who has called us from Baltimore. Stephen, welcome to Midday.
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
I'm a small business owner. I have 50 employees. We have a construction company, and we're based in Baltimore City. Here's how I say it. We deal with the working poor as a lot of our entry-level employees. In Baltimore City, the huge majority, I'm going to say upwards of 80% of entry-level employees are typically African-American men that are close to illiterate, if not illiterate, and did not graduate from a Baltimore City high school. And I'm starting those folks out at minimum wage, and then pretty quickly, if they stay with us, they'll get to $10, $12, maybe even $13 an hour. But they don't bring a lot of skills with them. And the skills that they do bring are the skills that we end up teaching them within our own company. If you raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, what happens is the guy who's worked really hard and started at $8 an hour and he's now making $16 feels that he's being cheated because somebody else who doesn't have any skills is now making $15. And here is somebody who's worked hard and has gotten skills, and now he's making $16. So he's putting pressure on me to now raise his wages proportionate. And proportionate doesn't mean I'm raising at $17. Proportionate means I'm trying to raise him now $20. Because at $15 is the minimum wage, he needs to be making substantially more than $15 in his mind. And so it pushes everything up.
Stephen, I appreciate your walking us through how you approach it. Of course, as Ricara Jones has pointed out to us several times, this wouldn't happen all at once. It would be phased in. Does that affect the kind of pressure you see building? I think we've lost Stephen. Kaylee Locklear Toll, what would you say to Stephen? Maybe we've lost Kaylee also. Kaylee, are you still with us? So what would you say to Stephen Ricara Jones?
I'll just say that minimum wage workers, I think I've kind of made this point already, are not unskilled. We have a lot of minimum wage workers who have skills.
Stephen, who we lost, I mean, he knows his workers.
He also said that they're illiterate and they haven't graduated high school. So I don't know how fair that is to say about the African-American men that he said are coming to work for him. I don't think that's a very fair statement to assume that they're illiterate because they haven't, graduated from high school. I think most workers in this city, they work hard and they deserve good wages.
Kaylee Locklear Toll, are you with us?
I am here. Sorry about that.
Were you able to hear Stephen's point?
I did hear Stephen. I did.
And you would say to that?
small business owners in Baltimore certainly dealing with some of the issues that he brought up, and this goes back to my earlier points of if we're going to spend $145 million in an area, is this what we should be doing? And I think the answer has been reiterated over and over again that the answer is no. It's affordable housing is where we need to be focused. Expanding the earned income tax, back to some of the points that came up from Barbara earlier, that would be a great way to help individuals and lift them out of poverty. And there are just so many other areas, fixing education issues in the city to ensure that individuals are graduating from high school, have an opportunity to go on to college so they can get higher paying jobs. I really feel like what I've heard over and over again is that people want opportunity. But the fact of the matter is if we raise the minimum wage, it is going to disproportionately affect lower income earners. And in Baltimore City, where we already have a very high unemployment rate as compared to other areas of the state, that will devastate the economy and the lower income workforce.
Ricara Jones, we have just a minute or so left. If the vote this afternoon goes against the proposal, what will advocates like you do next? What's the plan?
So first, I want to just respond to that. We can't lift people out of poverty when they're still making poverty wages. Like, there's no way that we can bring people out of poverty if we still refuse to pay them a higher minimum wage. And on to tonight, we hope that tonight our council leaders have been listening to the stories that they've been hearing from workers in the city, and they've been hearing how they're struggling and how they need to make more money just to support themselves and care for their families. We hope that, you know, people like Councilwoman Houghton and Carl Stokes, they, when they get up and they leave their homes every day, they're looking into their neighborhoods and they're seeing people who are, you know, being forced on the street because they can't pay their rent. And we hope that they decide to do the right thing and that they vote for this bill tonight and help over 90,000 workers in the city of Baltimore. But, you know, if it doesn't work out that way, we're not going to give up because we're not going to give up on the city. We're not going to give up on the workers in the city. And the workers in the city aren't going to let us give up because they know that they need $15. They know that they need it now. So we're going to keep working at it. We're going to keep making calls. We're going to keep going to City Hall every day. You know, we'll be back.
Okay. I thank you. I thank you both. Ricara Jones is a political organizer with Local 1199 of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Kaylee Locklear-Toll, president of the Maryland Retailers Association. I appreciate your time. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
I also want to thank the DIS for supplying lunch today for midday guests. The DIS is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Signature burgers, wings, steaks, jumbo lump crab cakes. The DIS is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast on weekends on the web at thedisbaltimore.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. Some Marylanders will soon be paying a lot more for their water. The rate hikes will hit everyone who uses Baltimore City's water system. Why the increase and how much more will we be paying? I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org. or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.